Talk about a bad day. Imagine what disgraced Governor Andrew Cuomo is doing right now. Is he alone at home, slumped over a scotch? Is he surrounded by family and friends, plotting his next move? Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is here with his reaction to a fellow governor's fall. And they escaped the NXIVM sex cult before many of its leaders were jailed. Two former top members tonight with exclusive reaction to the latest celebrity leader locked up. Tonight on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. It is just after 10 p.m. in New York tonight. And Governor Andrew Cuomo might just be the loneliest guy in the state. He may very well be surrounded by friends and family at the governor's mansion in Albany. But make no mistake, Andrew Cuomo is a man on an island, having just gone through the gauntlet of what could be the worst day of his life. Resigning in disgrace and leaving office in 2 weeks, it is hard not to picture Andrew Cuomo tonight, tie loosened, slumped over a scotch, trying to figure out what the hell just happened. But it's also hard not to think that he might just be strategizing for what comes next. Something bigger, something bolder, something like maybe a comeback. Whatever it is he's doing and wherever he is doing it right now, there are very few of us who could imagine what he's going through. But Rod Blagojevich just might. The former governor of Illinois did not resign from office, but instead was arrested in 2008 on corruption charges. He was impeached in 2009 and was sentenced to 14 years in prison in 2015. Five of the 18 counts against him were thrown out. And in 2020, he was freed from prison when President Trump commuted his sentence. And we're lucky enough to have Rod Blagojevich with us tonight. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. I'm lucky enough to be back.
Well, does it hurt when I read an intro like that and I say those things? Because this is what I'm thinking Andrew Cuomo is spinning right now. My God, what's my legacy?
Of course it does. It stings, partly, largely because it's not true. The so-called sale of the Senate seat, which is what I'm known for, was reversed by the appellate court 7 years after I was arrested. It was a big lie. It was never a crime. And yet that was the centerpiece of the case. And I'm still trying to get the truth out and explain to people that never happened or the other things. Having said all of that, I am blessed and fortunate. A Republican president reached in to rescue me, a Democrat governor, restore my freedom and reunite me with my family, my wife, my two daughters. And I'm very blessed and fortunate.
It's a long road back. You know, it's a long road back. Do you think this is something that Governor Cuomo is thinking right now, or is he even there yet? Where is he right now in this moment, just, you know, a few hours after that speech?
Well, he's probably personally devastated. He's probably, as you say, surrounded by his family, his wife. Not his wife. Evidently, he's not married anymore, but he does have three daughters. It's a personal tragedy, of course, and on a human level, for me, I certainly feel terrible for him. I don't want to kick a guy when he's down, and yet I do feel like there's a big difference between what he did today and what I continue to do, and that is I never gave in. I never gave up. I insisted on my innocence. I still do, and I went down fighting. And the governor today put out a statement and gave a speech that was very impressive. He's eloquent like his father. He talked about how he's New York tough, and he's not a quitter. And then the very next line, he quit. And if you didn't do what they said you did, you should fight and go down fighting for the people of New York who elected you. If you did what they said you did, then you should resign, and you should accept responsibility, and you should atone for what you did. But I don't think you can have it both ways, and that's what the governor is trying to do.
Did you join Twitter today?
I did, as a matter
of fact. Okay, I thought I had heard right, and we grabbed you. I think this is your first tweet. Correct me if I'm wrong. I want to read it, and it has to do, of course, with Cuomo. Cuomo said he didn't do anything wrong, but then he quit. What? New Yorkers are tough, but quitting when you say you didn't do anything wrong isn't New York tough. Typical politician. Long on tough talk, but short on testicular virility. Well, way to come onto Twitter with a bang.
Well, look, I think, again, if he did those things, and it sure does appear that he may have, then I think he has to accept responsibility, then he should have quit. But he's insisting he didn't do it. And again, I feel like, you know, you talk tough, but you're not doing the walk. And you should stand up to the accusations and fight back. And even if you go down fighting, that's where you get your comeback. Winston Churchill said, nations that go down fighting come back. But those nations that surrender shamelessly never do. And my prediction for Governor Cuomo is he's not going to come back. I think he's calculating that he might. But I believe eventually the voters of New York are going to recognize that he, you know, quit. And he quit because he did something wrong.
But did he really have any choice? I mean, he really didn't have any allies. I mean, there might be a couple, you know, surrounding him in the governor's mansion, but the Democrats in New York, the Democrats across the country, the president, everybody had basically said, the ship has sailed, it's time to go.
Well, that's right. And again, here's something that I know about, because it happened to me, too.
You felt pretty lonely that night, I'm sure.
I felt lonely for 12 long years, including the 8 I was in prison. But let me say this. When you're the governor of New York, the second largest state in America, the governor of Illinois, the fifth largest state, or governor anywhere, you've been hired by the people to represent them and fight for them. And he has said in previous speeches that he's not going to let a group of politicians kick him out of office when the people elected him. So his obligation isn't only to himself. It's even larger. It's the people who elected him, and not allowing politicians to hijack him from office without a fight. Now, again, if you did it wrong, accept responsibility, and you owe the people that, you should leave. But he's insisting to this day he still didn't do anything wrong, and therefore, I believe he must fight. And I think his bigger problem, frankly, is the nursing home scandal, where 6,000 seniors lost their lives because of misguided policy that he had put in place. That, to me, is the bigger scandal.
Well, and politics will play into this, right? Because any chance that there's blood in the water, people sniff it. That's and right. They go to town. So I expect we're going to hear a lot of that, a lot more of that. But then there's the issues that are ahead that are frightening. I mean, impeachment stinks, right? But then there's criminal. And again, these are things that you can speak so eloquently to. These are real for him. Do you think today had any... Well, was there a scintillation and possibly a deal made with other Democrats in New York? Step down and we'll step off the impeachment. Or is he too toxic for anyone to even want to talk to?
No, I think he made a deal. I think there's an understanding between him and the legislative leaders in New York. I do. I think they said, you go quietly, we'll let this kind of slide away, and the people will forget. And in a year or so, you know, it'll be old news. And you can rebuild your life and try to come back politically. I do think that. And I think that's what kind of encouraged him to leave.
Is that the way it works, Rod Blagojevich? Honestly, like, politicians will say one thing publicly, like, he's got to go, and then have a meeting in the back room saying, go quietly and we'll talk to you in a few years. Tell me that can't be.
You remind me of that character Claude Rains in the movie Casablanca when he said...
Oh, I thought you were going to say Pollyanna.
No, he said, there was gambling here, Rick. I'm shocked.
Right.
No, there's nothing shocking about that. That, unfortunately, is how too many politicians are. There's a great amount of duplicity in the business, a lot of backroom stuff, behind-the-scenes stuff. I know from my own experience, offers and deals were being conveyed to me that if I left office on my own, that I could keep my salary and keep a security detail, but I couldn't pick a United States senator. There were all kinds of backroom things that they were trying to do with me, but I wouldn't do it because to quit would have been an admission of guilt. Now, I paid a heavy price. But I really believe my conscience is not only clear, but I'm back now, and I believe in a much stronger position to get the full truth out on what happened to me, the corrupt prosecution against me, and to be able to talk about the importance of not allowing the legislative branch to weaponize impeachment and prosecution, because what you're doing is you're weakening the executive branch, and you're making governors totally beholden to the legislative branch.
Oh, sorry about that. I hope we can still hear you. That was your mic.
That was my mic. Someone didn't like what I'm saying.
As long as we can still hear the governor. So, listen, what I think you hit the nail on the head is the devil's in the details. It's my favorite expression of all time, especially when it comes to litigation, right? The media can just sail on any kind of narrative it wants, right, and it becomes reality whether it's true or not. To that extent, there's a lot of people talking about Andrew Cuomo. There's a lot of people talking about things that are being said. Evidence is important, and nothing has actually been asserted in a court of law yet. In your particular case, loads of things were asserted in a court of law, and you ended up actually going down for it, and yet you still say things didn't go right. He's facing serious issues with forcible touching. He's facing a potential misdemeanor that does have prison time. How important is the evidence going to be? And how important is it going to matter when it comes to the narrative that's out there for everybody just sucking up all of these pictures today?
Well, that's a good question. Quickly, in my case, I had all kinds of evidence they wouldn't let me play, like tapes, FBI tapes, that would have proven that the conversations they used against me were twisted and out of context, and they were not criminal. But going to the issue of Governor Cuomo, No, he's stuck with the narrative now, especially since he quit like he did. He's always going to be remembered as a guy who was harassing women sexually. Even though he might deny it, his actions tell us he did it. He's in sort of like another Hall of Fame in New York. They have the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. They ought to have a Hall of Shame for New York politicians who sexually harass women. He's there with Anthony Weiner. He's there with Spitzer, the other governor. With all due respect to President Clinton, another New Yorker, he's there with him. And now Cuomo's in that group. So I think he's, notwithstanding his protestations, his actions tell most people, I think, that he did it. And I think the better, more honest approach would have been to accept that responsibility, then resign, apologize, and do good works to try to atone for those mistakes.
Those
wrongs.
President Trump has sort of changed the whole metric on whether you should ever apologize, right? He's just said if you don't, you'll just keep winning, and he sort of did. But does that work for everybody?
Well, I think some people would say it didn't work for me, and I still won't apologize, and I did 8 years in prison. But I wear that as a badge of honor because I didn't give in. I paid a heavy price, but I feel like I'm stronger and better as a result of it, and I can look my children in the face and my wife and the people that I didn't do anything wrong. And there's a higher issue involved, and that is, you know, the political process and the way the media runs with these narratives, as you say. Mm-hmm. Again, on the Cuomo stuff, the sexual harassment is bad, but the nursing home stuff, that is a real scandal. That's where you have 6,000 senior citizens who lost their lives because of a policy he directly implemented on the 25th of March, 2020, while he was busy being a celebrity and getting a $5 million book contract. If you're asking me what he needs to atone for, mostly it's that.
But he doesn't have criminal exposure there.
Not yet.
Do you think there's possibility?
Well, I mean, I see how creative some of these prosecutors mm-hmm. can be when it comes to that sort of thing. So, yeah, I can see where they can make a case for criminal negligence. Having said that, I sure hope that's not the case. I don't want to see anything like that happen to him. I don't want to see a guy who was the governor of a big state have to end up doing what I had to do, going to prison. I don't believe he's ever going to go to prison. I don't think he should. I don't think he should even be. I don't know about being charged. That's another issue. Maybe misdemeanor for what he's allegedly been accused of. But I hope he doesn't go through that. But I also have to say, if I was a voter in New York and he came back and wanted to run for office, I'd vote for the other candidate.
So let me play something really quickly. This is the president talking about Andrew Cuomo today. I think it's important, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But have a listen to President Biden.
Andrew Cuomo, his resignation, what impact is the head of the party? What impact does his resignation have on the Democratic Party?
I think the impact is all on Andrew Cuomo and his decision to make that judgment. And I respect his decision.
So one of the things I thought was odd in the speech that Governor Cuomo gave today, and he's still governor for another 2 weeks, mm-hmm. is that he said this was a generational thing. It's hard to sort of suggest that a generational thing mm-hmm. is hugging with your crotch next to someone. I don't think that's generational. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden, you know, snuggles in and gives the generational older guy hug. But I don't think these kinds of things are generational. Is that going to be so offensive that it'll do more harm than good?
I think so. It's not generational to reach in under a woman's blouse and cup her breasts, which is the allegation that was made. It's never generational to touch the backside of a young staffer who works for you, a woman, without her consent. He allegedly did that.
Well, George Bush did that too and didn't seem to think it was wrong. I mean, there was a day when I think a lot of men didn't think that was wrong. They sure as hell should after the last 5 years of Me Too. And a guy like Andrew Cuomo should have been listening to the news. I mean, I've been saying it for 30 years, but yeah, loudly for the last five. I just can't understand how he couldn't have heard all of this, how he didn't hear about Weinstein, how he didn't hear about mm-hmm. Matt Lauer, how he didn't hear about all these things. Don't you think it's just kind of unbelievable?
Yes, of course. But hypocrisy is it's a talent and a skill that politicians have, and they're actually proud of it. So the fact that they criticize others for actions they do, that's just routine business for them. Look, we had President Clinton in the 1990s, and I think the most damaging thing about the Clinton presidency, and it was a good presidency and when you look at the economy and things like that, and I was there as a congressman voting not to impeach him for what he did. But what he did was very bad. A lot worse than what they're saying Cuomo did, and now Cuomo has to resign. It was a different era back then, and I think some of those guys from that generation, Al Franken being another one, mm-hmm. felt emboldened by what President Clinton did and actually almost want to mimic him a little bit. And I think that's really bad, and so I think this is a helpful thing that's happening today.
I'm always real careful to not call that the Clinton-Lewinsky affair. This wasn't Lewinsky's affair. This right. was what Clinton did to Lewinsky, let's be clear. Rod Blagojevich, good to see you. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. And boy, do you ever have insight. So you were one of the first people I thought of today. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it, Ashley. Appreciate your candor, too.
Thank you.
All right. So coming up after the break, we've assembled an all-star panel to dig into Governor Cuomo's resignation, sudden resignation, I guess, including a longtime friend of the Cuomo family. Was it a real resignation or was this just part of a comeback strategy? Going to discuss that next. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Governor Cuomo resignation. Ooh, what a day, right? We've assembled quite the panel to discuss this surprise announcement and all of the possible fallout from it. I'm joined by Lanny Davis, a longtime friend of the Cuomo family and former special counsel to President Clinton. Mark McKinnon is a former advisor to George W. Bush and John McCain, and you'll know him as co-host of Showtime's The Circus, one of the best shows on television. And attorney and legal expert Elizabeth Fagan. She's a founding partner of the firm Fagan Scott and the co-lead counsel for the class action suit against Harvey Weinstein. Thank you to all three of you for being here. Lanny, I'm going to begin with you because you've known the governor and his family a long time. You are close friends. I know you don't like the things you've been hearing, but this has got to be a really hard tightrope for you to walk.
Well, I knew Dad, Mario Cuomo, when both Andrew and Chris were small, and I was handing out leaflets for then Governor Cuomo, Andrew being the second governor in the family. So it's a sad time for any friend of the Cuomo family. And that being said, what Governor Andrew Cuomo did was truly indefensible. The Attorney General's report was overpowering. Of course, what was called for today, and I'm sad for Governor Andrew Cuomo that he didn't do it, is that when you say I'm sorry, when you've made a big series of mistakes with victims, you don't put any ifs and you don't qualify. You simply say I'm sorry. And by the way, the victims do not have to accept your apology. Indeed, I think Governor Cuomo should have called every victim or alleged victim and apologized personally, and still should. So I was disappointed that he didn't step up and follow the basic crisis management 101 rule. When you mess up, you own up, and you don't have a if, and, or but after the words, I'm sorry. So that, to me, would have been the advice I would have given him. Having said that, I still feel very sad about the tragedy. He's done great things as governor during the pandemic, certainly did great things. Now there's a shadow that will be over all those great things, and it's a tragedy.
Well, and the nursing home scandal still has to shake out as well. You know, Mark, I think last week I was on vacation in Canada, but I watched you on this show predicting that this was going to happen. As you watched Governor Cuomo's speech today, were you satisfied? Did you feel there were big chunks missing? What'd you make of it?
Well, I think it was problematic on a number of fronts, Ashley. I mean, one is that, you know, to describe your actions as something you've done all your life doesn't help your case. And the other thing is that I think that what he's trying to say is that, you know, I never really intended any harm, and these sort of things that are being litigated and looked at aren't really all that problematic when he wrote laws that make what he did problematic. So, in other words, he's trying to separate himself from his personal conduct from his public persona as governor, where he wrote all the laws that make precisely the kinds of conduct that he did problematic. And I'll say to Lanny's point, I wish he had reached out to Lanny. I mean, Lanny's a wise counselor, and part of his problem is that Governor Cuomo kept his friends far and kept his enemies far and his friends even further. At the end of the day, he didn't have any allies, actually, and that's why I said the other day on your show that's why I think it was going to fall apart, because there was nobody there to defend him. He had no allies, and that ultimately meant he was going to get impeached.
Well, and when Melissa DeRosa stepped down this week as well, that was pretty catastrophic for him, because some of those who are not too fond of her called her the enabler, the enforcer, the person who for years allowed, you know, his behavior you know, to continue. So without her, he truly was missing a lot of allies. Beth, I want to play a portion of the speech today where the governor qualified his behavior, and I'll just, you know, put the contours on it as generational. So now that you know what the soundbite is going to be, you can really listen closely. Have a look.
I do hug and kiss people casually, women and men. I have done it all my life. It's who I've been since I can remember. In my mind, I've never crossed the line with anyone. But I didn't realize the extent to which the line has been redrawn. There are generational and cultural shifts that I just didn't fully appreciate. And I should have. No excuses.
So, Beth, part of me actually does feel wistful for many older gentlemen out there across the country who say, well, I don't know what the rules are anymore. For God's sake, why can't it just go back to the way when it was easy and none of this would, you know, be a problem? But then there's hugging where you make contact with your crotch. And I don't even think my great-grandfather would have done that and thought, this is fine.
You know, that's what I think every time I hear him raise the idea of generational differences. He reached into a woman's blouse and groped her breast. Allegedly, you're right. But what you have is this pattern of women who didn't speak to each other before, but who experienced the same type of conduct, whether it's, you know, the hug and then touching on the butt. That's not generational. In fact, we have a governor here who drew the line. He passed laws during his time, supposedly, you know, to enforce sexual abuse laws. So he knew exactly what that line was, but he used his power and position and privilege, really, to cross that line.
Yeah. And also, why does it take 11? I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of the hundreds or the 80s or the 50s, you know, women who say something and we're still wondering. Well, maybe they're not telling the truth, all 50. Or I mean, Cosby, Weinstein, it just keeps happening. When does a woman's vote on justice actually equal a man's? When does it become less than 1/150th?
Hopefully soon, but we're certainly not there yet. And I think right now we're in a place where the tide is turning and changes are being made because women are using their voices collectively. And I think it's so important that they continue to do so.
And I keep saying contemporaneous reporting and corroborating evidence, even if you don't believe a tone of voice of what some people are saying, you can't ignore evidence. And that stuff is starting to rain down. And I'm fascinated in that part of it, if it actually becomes a criminal case. It's an investigation right now, but don't go anywhere, all three of you, because there's something that I have been trying to hear all day, and actually not just all day, for like weeks. I've been trying to hear what the Clintons have to say about this. I mean, think about this. They're New Yorkers. He's their governor, Mrs. Clinton. Well, she was the senator in New York, and Cuomo was HUD secretary in President Clinton's cabinet, but they haven't said anything. I'm going to ask my guests about that next. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Governor Cuomo resignation. Still with me, Lanny Davis, longtime friend of the Cuomo family and former special counsel to President Clinton. Mark McKinnon, a former advisor to George W. Bush and John McCain and the co-host of Showtime's The Circus, and attorney and legal expert Beth Fagan. So, Lanny, I went to break talking about the silence of the Clintons, and since you're the closest person to the Clintons, I want to ask you about that. It seems deafening.
Well, I told your producer I would comment about Governor Cuomo, but I've done my work for both the Clintons through the years because of long-time friendship with the two of them, so I'm not going to go beyond that tonight, Ashley, and happy to talk about Governor Cuomo. That's what I was invited on to talk about, but not going to talk about the Clintons.
No, I think that's fair. I understand that it's honorable as well. Mark, I'll take a crack at it with you then, because
sure.
You're open season. I think a lot of people are wondering when they're going to weigh in and what they might say. It's certainly awkward for, I think, President Clinton.
Well, first of all, Lanny, I appreciate your discretion Since I don't have a relationship, I don't have to have, but actually, I'll just refer to what you mentioned before, which is that, you know, the conduct of Andrew Cuomo that we now know from the investigation doesn't really even rise to the level of what President Clinton did to Monica Lewinsky. So, I mean, the good news take out of all this, if there is any, really, is to say the laws have finally caught up with where they need to be. And this kind of behavior, we've known about it for a long time. It's gone on with presidents, with governors, and it's been tolerated. And now the laws have finally caught up. And ironically, as we mentioned here on your program, Andrew Cuomo is the one that drew the line. He's the one that changed the line. He's the one that raised the bar, and then he didn't meet his own expectations of the bar that he himself set. So, listen, I mean, you know, but again, I think in talking about President Clinton, we know that behavior was not excusable, but it was, at the time, it was accepted. It wouldn't have been accepted now. He would not have made it through his presidency had that occurred now. Just as Andrew Cuomo is not able to get through his governorship.
Yeah, it's one thing, to weigh in and say something. It's another to be facing what Andrew Cuomo may be facing, and that's criminal charges. I mean, there's a criminal investigation into that. And Beth Fagan, in any office, a lot of this stuff goes on, right? And prosecutors can't just go prosecuting every lech out there that does this stuff, or we just never get out of court. But in this particular case, don't they sometimes make an example of a big shot to say, enough with this kind of behavior. This is the way we prosecute everybody. We prosecute the big guy and warn everybody else.
I think so. And I think it's changing, right? We saw with Harvey Weinstein, who really was at the top of the entertainment industry, they finally decided to make an example of him. And this is a perfect opportunity to say, the laws apply to politicians too. You know, you can't not use your office and the power and the privilege that comes with to abuse women.
Yeah. Lanny Davis, I want to ask you, because you do so much crisis counseling as well, is there a future for Andrew Cuomo after this?
So I'd like to think that his future is making this a teaching moment for other men who have no clue about offending, abusing, taking advantage of a power disparate relationship with women in the workplace or in privacy. This could be a teaching moment if Governor Cuomo had stepped up and hadn't put any ifs, ands, or buts behind his apology, and even added, I don't expect my apology to be accepted. I just want to communicate that apology personally to every single of these women who came forward. This could be a teaching moment, just as the Me Too movement has been a very valuable and important teaching moment for many men. So maybe that's a future, a healing future for Andrew Cuomo, rather than attacking or defending, but teaching. And maybe that's a possibility. I hope so. For the family that I've known for so many years, I hope so.
Yeah. So there's this other issue, and that is we've got two more weeks with him at the helm, and then in comes Kathy Hochul. I have to admit, I live right next to New York, and I thought, gosh, that's not a really familiar name. And I wondered, is that because she's kept at arm's length? Is that because I maybe don't follow enough local politics in New York? I don't know. But let me ask you, Mark McKinnon. Kathy Hochul has been at the governor's side for 7 years. She's publicly distanced herself, but she's about to take the top job. I guess my question is, yikes, is she going to have to fend off being his ally for this long, or has she done enough just by, you know, publicly distancing?
I think she'll get it coming and going. You know, I mean, I think it says something, Ashley, that she's been lieutenant governor for 7 years. And not only are you not familiar with her, I was not familiar with her. I was on a show with three, you know, 30, 40 year veterans of politics who didn't know, who couldn't remember her name. So, but she's being rocketed into the spotlight now. She's got a legitimate platform to run, but I think she's going to have some serious competition. And as you said, there's going to be some liability with the fact that she was so close to Cuomo.
I am so glad you said that, because I really sort of stepped out on a limb thinking, oh, Mark McKinnon is going to say, you idiot. She's been around forever. The fact that you said that made me feel so much better. I got to thank you all. I mean, this has been very fulsome, and I so appreciate it. And Lanny, I'm going to repeat it. I think you're honorable. You know, you're the kind of guy everybody wants to employ if you're not going to slay your former employers and your friends just because some dumb anchor asks you for an opinion. Thank you to all three of you, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
All right, so the Cuomo story is really just beginning. We're going to be following it forever. But there's another sensational story out of upstate New York as well. Allison Mack, star of the TV show Smallville, is headed to prison for several years because of her role in that super weird sex cult called Nexium. But is her sentence long enough at 3 years? And she was right up at the top there. Coming up, two survivors of the cult are going to talk with us exclusively with their reactions to the sentence. You know, it was by far one of the more bizarre stories that I've ever covered on cable news. A group of highly affluent, well-educated, and very motivated people all swept up in a creepy sex cult based in upstate New York. There were TV stars, there were movie stars, there was even a billionaire in line for the Seagram's fortune. Women in the cult were branded with the initials of the cult leader. A freakish, Svengali-like figure with a shell of a background and a lot of empty promises. The story swept across the country in HBO's docuseries, The Vow.
You know, these are adult women, and this is their choice.
Nobody joins a cult. They join a good thing.
All of the accusations are not true.
Everybody is a blend of good and bad.
The brand is my wife.
What a show. And if you watched it, you know what I mean when you can't wait for the sequel. But the dominoes in that cult began to fall when the members had just had enough. And they went to the police. And one by one, leaders of the Nexium sex cult were dragged into court and hauled off to jail. The latest to be sentenced, a famous actress named Allison Mack, the star of the show Smallville, and a top lieutenant in the cult. She is fixing to spend the next 3 years behind bars for what she did, and that is probably small consolation to Sarah Edmondson and Anthony Nippy Ames, former leaders of the cult who escaped just in the nick of time. I'm happy to say they joined me tonight with reaction to this latest sentencing and the sentencing's still to come. Hi, Sarah and Nippy. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Okay, so it seems like, you know, throughout the last year, character after character goes into court and gets a sentence, and then, you know, we all wonder if it's enough. On this one, Allison Mack, she was one of the top. I mean, she was responsible for so much, and yet it's just a three-year sentence. So what do you guys have to say about that?
You know, I understand for people who are looking at this from the outside that that may not seem like enough. And ultimately, Nippy and I really trust the judge. This is a very complicated case. This has to do with indoctrination, also known as undue influence or resocialization. And ultimately, we don't believe that actually Allison, you know, is a real threat to anybody anymore, but the judge also understands that a precedent has to be set because crimes were committed. And while she does appear to be awake and contrite and taking responsibility for her actions, she's no longer a follower of Keith, which is ultimately for us the most important thing. Then we trust his decision. We're not legal experts, but...
You know, I think he also saw her as a victim of him as well. So I think that played into his decision.
Well, I think you guys know all too well what that means, right? Because you guys were recruiters. I mean, I think 2,000 members or so. Is that crazy, that number that I just read, that you might have been responsible for bringing in, you know, a couple thousand members?
Directly and indirectly through us, it's a big number. And that's partly why we've done what we've done in terms of taking responsibility. So as long as people are awake and no longer aligned with Keith, which unfortunately was not what Claire Brofman did, she wouldn't disavow him, which is why she got close to 8 years, which is, I think, also fair given her role in the company and doing many terrible things and committing worse crimes, perhaps, depending on your...
You know, I also think the judge understands, you know, this entire thing is the effect of really one person. And if Keith Raniere doesn't exist, a lot of these people aren't having these things go on in their lives, and we're not having this conversation.
Yeah, so, he's got 120 years, right, behind bars, Nippy. So it's, look, there's an appellate process, et cetera, but he is cooling his heels. But weirdly, really weirdly, supporters go out and dance for him outside of the jail, and they proselytize for him still. Do you guys get it why this is still going on after everything has been said and done, after all of the court action, after the 120-year sentence, after the jailing of that guy? This is what these women are doing, in support of him.
Look, I don't like it, but I do understand it because I used to be in that same belief system. I never did that. I never danced in front of the prison, but I did believe that we were being misunderstood. So now they have doubled down on that. The world doesn't understand. This is their belief, not mine. Keith's genius, and they have to defend him. And to leave now would mean, in their mind, that they are weak and they don't have character. So they're just recommitting, proving how much they are willing to do for him, which is really to defend their own intelligence. To admit now that they were wrong would to say, oh, I really screwed up, which we've done. Yeah. And eventually they'll have to do, but they're not ready to do that. They're not strong enough yet, and that's hard.
Yeah, and it's case by case. I think, you know, people have their own reasons, and I try to be, as frustrating as it can be sometimes, sensitive to where they are and not persecute them and judge them, and hopefully that, you know, after time, they'll wake up and go back to lives and have productive lives, hopefully.
We want that for all of them.
By the way, I mentioned women who were dancing out in front of the jail. There's men out there, too. It's a mess. Oh, yeah. I didn't want to single anyone out. So I want to read something that Allison Mack wrote, because you do talk about contrition a lot as part of this process. And she wrote a pretty, you know, solid apology letter. Here's part of it. I am sorry to those of you that I brought into NXIVM. I am sorry I ever exposed you to the nefarious and emotionally abusive schemes of a twisted man. I am sorry that I encourage you to use your resources to participate in something that was ultimately so ugly. Aside from that letter, Sarah, she actually turned evidence, like she turned tape recordings over to the prosecutors. She was really instrumental, wasn't she? Despite what she had done in the cult, she was instrumental in bringing Keith down, wasn't she?
I believe that cooperation was part of the judge's reason for giving her a lower sentence, just as he did for Lauren Salzman, who was the proverbial nail in the coffin for Keith's ultimate sentence. And I believe both of those women cooperated, and that was a big part of his decision.
All right, Sarah and Nippy, stay with me because I have so much more I want to ask you about. Not the least of which is, yes, you escaped the cult, but they had blackmail material on you. You know, a lot of these members willingly handed it over, and now I wonder, do you fear it's out there? Could it still come back to haunt you? I'm going to ask you about that next.
So Lauren wanted to invite me to something that's helped her more than anything else. She's like, this is exactly what you need to be strong. She couldn't tell me anything else until I gave her collateral.
Commitment has to be collateralized. Your word is your bond. No excuses.
This thing happened underneath my nose. I trusted this whole thing.
That was from HBO's The Vow, describing the NXIVM sex cult's idea of collateral, in which members had to supply their superiors with blackmail material, in many cases nude photos, compromising information. We're back now with Sarah Edmondson and Anthony Nippy Ames. Guys, do you ever worry that the collateral that you had to hand over may still be out there somewhere and come back to haunt you?
Honestly, the worst has already happened to me. I'd be more worried if I was one of the other women who gave way more photos. For some reason, they let me off lightly in that regard. But there's definitely a treasure trove for somebody somewhere out there. I have no idea where it is. And that is a bit scary. It'd say more for them than for me. But I think for any member of NXIVM, they knew about our deepest, darkest secrets. All the intake forms had a lot of personal information from us. And that's, you know, I'd like that to all be returned eventually. Yeah. For sure.
Hey, Nippy, just in the last week or so, I might have my timing off, but $3.2 million in restitution was ordered for Keith Raniere to pay victims. And I'm wondering, do you guys get any of that?
I don't.
None? Who gets it?
It's been sorted out. Mostly the women of DAS, and rightfully so. They were targeted, I think, in the most abusive way. So in this particular case, I think the restitution is pretty fair.
Well, Sarah, that's you. You were branded. You've had to remove that awful site of Keith Raniere's initials.
I'm not totally sure how the numbers were, how they came up with the numbers, but the largest numbers came to the women who were sex trafficked, branded, and will have lots of years of therapy to go through and have their brands removed. I'm really actually very happy for these women to be able to have the resources to get their lives back on track. And that's all I can say about that. It's a sort of a weird, bittersweet thing that it's come to this.
Yeah, we have our lives. So yeah. I don't,
we got our children.
Yeah, for me, money would be fine, great, but that's not really the motivation here.
We're just trying to educate people.
Yeah, 4 years ago, we thought we'd be in litigation for 5 to 10 years. So if you had told me this is where we're going to be in 4 years, I would have taken it.
You know what? It's so funny you say that, because Seth Rogen, one of our producers, found a tweet from a year ago. Famous actor Seth Rogen. I want to read it for you. I don't know if you guys know about it, but
yes, I do.
It's something else. It says, "The Vow is wild to watch, and probably even more wild because I went to summer camp with Sarah Edmondson. I'm happy she got out of the cult." So I think when you say what you say, but that you're happy that you're where you are today, you're probably spot on. Nancy Salzman, on the other hand, still has to be sentenced, and she was Keith's number two. I mean, if you watch The Vow, she is part of it right from the get-go. What do you think she should face in terms of sentencing, guys?
Want to handle that one?
Go for it.
I think we differ on this. The judge has, I think, gotten it pretty fair. I mean, it's a hard thing, justice. He's hitting the empathy aspect of it pretty well and the justice aspect of it pretty well. It depends on, I think, where she is, and I think his objective impression of where she is. I think he's done a pretty good job so far. I don't really know everything, the nuances, in the way that I think he might. So,
in terms of her cooperation and
and all that stuff. All that said, you run the red light. I think you're going to have to. There has to be a consistency in our justice system, and I think if she's guilty of those things, there ought to be something there. I don't know that she's better off in jail and society's better off in jail. I don't think that's the case, but I do think something has to.
I think she needs to stop coaching people. She's coaching people still, and I think she needs to learn a new method before she does that. That's my personal
thing. That's a good point to end on. I want to remind everybody that you guys have an awesome podcast called A Little Bit Culty. Congratulations. You're about to launch season 2, and I can't wait for season 2 of The Vow as well. So, Sarah and Anthony, thank you so much for sharing your stories and always weighing in. And the news will continue, so I will be calling you again, and we'll talk soon.
All right.
Well, after your phone call.
Okay, you too, be well. Thanks for being with us. And thanks, everyone, for watching tonight.